It's time for Mac Geek Gab, and listener Val brings us our quick tip of the week. Val says, I just wanted to share something that's been a game changer for me. As someone who preaches often on Sundays, I find that the presenter mode in the Pages app is much easier to see than the standard view. It works on all Apple devices, but it really comes into its own on the iPad. The clean layout and larger text options make delivering sermons far more comfortable. If anyone needs to read from Pages for extended periods or in front of an audience, presenter mode is a great tool to consider. Thanks, Val. More tips like this, plus your questions answered today on Mac Geek Gab 1055 for Monday, September 16th, National Tattoo Story Day, 2024. Greetings, folks, and welcome to Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in quick tips like Val did. You send in cool stuff found. You send in questions. We share them all, hopefully providing some context for the first two and some answers for the latter. The goal being all of us get to learn at least five new things every single time we get together. And here on National Tattoo Story Day in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here on the windswept plains of South Dakota, I'm Adam Christensen.
I am always, every time I read that, I am reminded of this.
Do you have any tattoos, Brad?
So, you know, I don't know.
Do you have any tattoos?
Do you have any tattoos, Brad? From Rocky Horror. I've never seen the movie. I have never actually even seen the musical, but I've played drums for the musical so many times that I know the story now. So, But I believe that's Tim Curry delivering that line, which wasn't loud enough when I did it the first time. So,
do you have any tattoos, Brad?
Certainly not.
There you go. So, Brad had no stories to tell. We have lots of stories to tell here today. Adam, instead of asking you about whether or not you have tattoos and what their stories are, can I ask you, we're recording this on Friday the 13th, right after iPhone pre-orders opened up. Did you spend any money this morning, my friend?
I did. I spent way too much money this morning, probably.
Same.
More than I wanted to.
Yeah.
I did completely pay off my Apple card right before I made that purchase.
Okay.
So the first thing I did this morning was pay off my Apple card because we got a bunch of travel coming up. So I had racked up already quite a bill. But I just added to it by getting a black 256 iPhone 16 Pro.
Okay.
So I did end up.
You did wind up going back
route.
To the Pro. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. I didn't think I could give up the display and then.
The always on display, you mean? Or the.
The always on display. Yeah. And I mean, ProMotion's nice too, but it was probably more about the always on display. I've just gotten used to it being able to, especially like even just as I'm sitting here working, being able to look down if a notification comes in and just see my phone. I mean, yeah. I guess it would come on if I got a notification, but just being able to glance down and see even like the time. I mean, it's stupid stuff like that, right? But it's like little conveniences that I thought, you know, I'm going to miss certain things if I don't. I'm used to doing it that way right now.
Got it.
So like I've got accustomed to it.
Yes.
And then probably the bigger thing, though, was that I thought was worth probably the money was the upgraded wide angle. And I think I do think I'd miss the telephoto. I would not miss the telephoto because they both have telephoto. I think the non-pro is a 2X now, but the
correct
right or
does it, it, have, it no, has it zoom have it doesn't have telephoto
doesn't have a telephoto lens
right.
Yeah, so I would miss the telephoto and the fact that it's a now 5X versus the 2X that I have. I think I would take advantage of that.
Yeah.
And then the you know, higher res wide angle. So like the camera upgrades and the always on display seemed to be worth the $200 to me.
Okay.
It was kind of the judgment call that I made on that one.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yep. And then I did also buy an order. I could have ordered them earlier, but I just ordered them today. The AirPods Pro 2, because I have the original AirPods Pro. And I think we talked about last time, I do have hearing aids that I paid a ton of money for and I don't think are going to be as good as the hearing aid feature with the AirPods Pro 2.
Yes.
To be honest with you.
Yes.
So.
Yep. All right. Cool. Cool. I stuck with the 16. I did a lot of soul searching after our conversation on Monday. I sat down with Lisa. We both talked about it. And Lisa doesn't quite know this. I told her I was on the fence between just keeping my 15 Pro and getting her the 16, or keeping the, you know, giving her my 15 Pro and keeping the 16. I actually bought two 16s this morning. I bought one in ultramarine 256 and one in pink 256. And the reasons for this are multiple. Lisa, this is where my mistake may have been made, and I need to see it and get it in her hands. She takes pictures with her phone a lot. She seems to think that she would be okay with the cameras in the 16 versus the 16 Pro. And so that in and of itself, that's a worthy experiment, right? To see. But the other thing is that camera button, which of course the 16 has.
Yep.
It was the most attractive thing to her. She's like, I wind up, you know, editing and cropping my photos anyway. She's like, I don't think the extra zoom really matters. I'm like, okay, well, I could make an argument either way, but you're the one that uses it. And she's like, yeah, she's like, I don't think so. And so, so I did go with the 16s for both of us. And the reason I got two was that the Apple intelligence features that I've been testing in 18.1 are really a game changer. And I want everyone in my family, the four of us, to have access to that on our phones, as soon as possible. So by buying two 16s, I now have three devices in the family that can support Apple intelligence, my 15 Pro being one of them. And yep. It means I need to buy at least one more phone this year, which will come Christmas-ish for one, probably just one of the kids, maybe both. I don't know. Probably just one, because I mean it is a lot of money to keep spending. So and we do find that 256 is the number for our family. So I bought two of them, two 16s this morning, and there's one more coming. The reason I didn't order the third this morning is I don't want to start the warranty on it until I'm gonna until it's gonna be in someone's hands, which probably won't be Christmas. It'll probably be mid to late November. Just because we might celebrate an early Christmas when our daughter comes home, assuming she comes home for a little bit. So I've got to ride the wave on that, though. I've got to keep an eye on how far out orders are marching and place that order at the right time. So I got to be careful on this.
Yeah.
Because I almost got burned on that last year or 2 years ago. I think it was 2 years ago. Yeah. So,
I mean, last year would have partially made sense. I kind of feel like, I mean, unless there's just volume supply chain issues, I guess it does have the new chip. So maybe because the 18's in there, it's at bigger risk. But I feel like we're kind of past those days of like availability on iPhones, like flying out the window super fast anymore. Because I think like I even got to the point where I didn't upgrade last year. And, you know, like I'm the prime person to upgrade. And I talked to a lot of people who are also prime people that upgrade that didn't upgrade. So it'll be interesting to see how the numbers are after today.
Yes.
Right. In terms of like, are they timing out? I'm going to guess not. I'm going to guess like you could pop on and get an iPhone 16 or iPhone any model tomorrow or at the end of the week or
interesting.
Like, I'd be surprised if they actually sell out.
Yeah. It was the 14
could be wrong.
Pro. 2 years ago, we got one for our son for Christmas. I think it was 14 Pro, right? Because that would have been 2022. Yeah. And like, it was dicey getting it. By like middle of November, for whatever reason, it was hard to find these things. So, but we'll see. Yeah. You might be right. Yeah. You might be right. So,
yeah. And I mean, it'll be interesting. I mean, because they could also be adjusting supply based on sales kind of flattening out.
Correct.
You know, so they could ramp down, and then Christmas comes and people are like, oh, I want a new, I'm going to get the new phone for the family. And
So
that'll be interesting.
Pete is not here today, as you've sorted out. We don't know what Pete has ordered. I'm assuming he went with the 16 Pro, not the 16 Pro Max. I've been talking to him this week. Our thoughts are with Pete and his family, and Pete is with his family. Pete's mom passed away this week, and so obviously they're spending some time together, and our thoughts are with him. So he did give us, obviously gave us permission to share that. We can dedicate this episode to Pete and his family and his mom and all that. But I'm assuming Pete bought the 16 Pro, because his only reason for buying the large one was the camera. And once we realized that the camera was no different in those two, there you go. We got emails from a lot of you this week too, that, you know, as we all realized that together, I was like, wait a minute, don't necessarily need to go that far. So I did not buy my AirPods Pro Gen 2 yet. I will. I am definitely going to. I figured, I mean, Amazon has them, or had them, for $199, which is a decent price. Sometimes there are Black Friday sales on these kinds of things. And especially since it's a 1 year old product, I'm kind of waiting that out. The software to do all the hearing aid stuff is not available to any of us yet. So I'm not in a huge rush, although I have plenty of my AirPods Pro Gen 1 are shot. I'm on the fence as to whether I should replace the one earplug from, I forget the thing we mentioned.
Do you want mine? Because I don't have anybody to give mine to.
Which one of yours is shot?
My Gen 1s. They're not shot. My Gen 1s work great.
Oh, it was Jeff's Gen 1 that were shot. One of the ears. It was like, yeah, that's right. If we have a good set between us, can we pair them all together? Like, how does that work? I don't know.
Mine works great, and earwax aside, you can have them.
Cerumen is a thing. That's right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because nobody in my family wants them. The two people who I could give them to won't want them, and then my other daughter already has her own pair. So
got it. All right. Well, let me think about that. Well, I know where to find you, and we'll talk. But yeah, Cerumen is not cerulean. I learned it's a different color. Shall we go and do some more quick tips here?
All right, let's do some more quick tips. Bill has one. He says, I've known for years about turning the virtual iOS or iPad OS keyboard into a trackpad by tapping and holding my finger on the screen. What I learned today is that if you continue to hold the one finger on the screen, but tap the keyboard with a second finger, you can now move the original finger and it will select text as long as you drag it. Remove the finger to stop selecting additional text. For example, hold the finger on the keyboard to get the virtual keyboard, move the cursor to the beginning of the text you want to select, tap a second finger on the keyboard, and then select the text you want. This makes cutting or copying text easier.
Did you know about this, Adam?
I did. I forget to use it, and I do the stupid thing where I'm trying to like grab that dumb handle that's a teeny tiny tap point, and it like doesn't go where you want it to go, and selecting text is a thing that you can do with the trackpad-y kind of thing.
I had no idea. This was this isn't something that I learned and forgot. I have no recollection of ever being exposed to this. And what I love about this, so I love that I'll be able to do it. But what I especially love is when I'm in line for something, this is how it happens. Like, in line for a film at South by Southwest, this is generally where this conversation comes. But what do you do for a living? We do the thing. I do a podcast. And what is it? And I share, we do tips and tricks. Like, do you have an iPhone? Yeah. Well, we share tips about that. And then in that moment, there's an expectation that I'm going to share a tip with someone. Right. And so I often default to did you know that you can hold down the space bar and do the thing? About half the people that I show that to know it. And the other half, of course, like all of us were when we first saw it, our, you know, our minds are blown. Now I have something to show the people that already know it. So that I think the reason that came to mind is this ensures I won't forget to use it myself. So yeah, I was pretty stoked about that when I found it.
Yeah, cool tip.
Yeah, I am a 1Password user, as I've mentioned many times. And 1Password on the Mac recently brought in a change, a user experience change, where when you're auto-filling in Safari, you it will auto-fill and then what's the right way to say it? It will auto-submit. It'll auto-fill and then auto-submit. And that's great. It streamlines the whole process. Except when it's not. And there's certain websites where I know the auto-fill, auto-submit thing basically bypasses the need for checking the Remember Me box. But there's still some places where I want to check the Remember Me box. And I can't if they ask for username first, and then the Remember Me is on the password screen, right? Because if it asks for username and I tell it to auto-submit, it auto-submits the username, sees the password screen. I watch the little box go by unchecked, but the box is on the second screen where I have no interaction. And so I was like, all right, so I filed a support request, right? And you can, there's two things. You can disable it entirely, or you can disable it per login. The part that blew me away was I didn't know that the place where you set this stuff up even existed. So if you're a 1Password user, you have the little icon in your browser toolbar. If you right-click that, there is a settings screen that comes up. And it's a huge option, set of options in this screen. And you can go to autofill and save there, and you can turn off sign in automatically after autofill. So that would just turn it off completely. You can also, as I said, disable this on a per item basis by clicking on, again, just click on that icon, but don't right click it. Just click it standard, open it up, find the item that you want to change. And then there's three little dots, vertical dots, in the header of that icon. And there's a series of options there. The first one is edit, and then you can add it to favorites. But one of them is don't sign in automatically. I will note that this option is not available in the 1Password app when you edit the same item. So this is why I had trouble finding it, because I didn't know where to look. But yeah, clicking the 1Password icon in your browser toolbar and then using the three little vertical dots on the icon allows you to set this on a per item basis. And it's been a game changer. That does sync from amongst all my Macs. So it is a persistent setting. It's just one you can only find in the user interface of 1Password in the browser. I will note, you have to click the icon to do it. If you do the thing where you, the keyboard shortcut to bring up the 1Password dialog, that does not have this option. You have to click the thing in your browser toolbar with the mouse. It's the only way. So hopefully that saves some of you from going through those headaches. I credit this one to Steph G, because Steph G was the customer support rep at 1Password who enlightened me to all of this.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now I have a question.
Go.
Because I'm guessing if that setting is not on the item record in the app, that says to me, because the plugin, right, is a separate quote unquote app.
We'll yes. call it an app. Yes.
For lack of a better term. Does that mean that setting is part of the plugin? And then so would that setting then be browser specific, or because it syncs, does it remember that across browsers? So if you set that in Safari and then you go try to log into that same account in Chrome.
Yep.
Will it not auto log you in Chrome, or so will Chrome auto log you in?
I am making sure that I need to unlock 1Password, evidently.
Or
I
had not unlocked Edge 1Password or installed. Whatever other browser has the plugin installed.
Sure.
Right?
Yep. So
I would guess that because it syncs, it would work cross browser. But
yeah, let me make sure
the plugin under the hood is browser specific.
So, you know what?
I'm surprised.
I said that it syncs. I'm not sure that it does. But hang on 1 second, because 1Password, you're right that the 1Password plugin or browser extension, I guess we're supposed to call, I don't know, whatever. The thing in the browser is a separate app. It uses the same data store as 1Password, but there are issues. In fact, my support request was not started because of this. It was started because of a bug that has since been fixed, where the browser plugin and the app were not staying in sync in terms of their unlocked state, and that was an issue. So I am making sure here that, it is specific. It does not sync across browsers. Well, I lied. Okay. Sorry. It does not sync across Macs. It is specific to this Mac. How is that even possible that it's storing its own preferences locally here?
Well, because most plugins or extensions are like little JavaScript apps, right?
Yes.
They're JavaScript based. And I'm guessing that it's storing that info like locally in your browser somewhere, would be my guess.
Yeah, but it's
either using local storage or...
It's about an item that's in my encrypted 1Password database. No. Okay, it definitely does. I picked one that I had not synced. So okay. I am seeing now that it does sync across Macs, at least as far as Safari is concerned. But now, do I have 1Password installed in Chrome on this computer? I don't. Okay, so it's odd, but
we'll have to maybe follow up on that one.
We'll have to follow up on that one. Yeah, I thought I had it installed in Chrome. I must have it installed in Chrome. What? Well, let me see what happens if I go to... This is real time here, folks. We are...
real time answers.
No, I guess I don't have the plugin installed in Chrome. Okay, so I'm not gonna mess with that right now.
No. We'll
figure but it out later. It does. I just confirmed that it does in fact sync from Mac to Mac, and I would guess that therefore it syncs browser to browser too, unless there's specific settings in it for each browser that are like baked into it. So we'll find out, or one of you will find out. Feedback at MacGeekGab.com.
Did you say feedback at MacGeekGab.com?
Yeah, feedback at MacGeekGab.com. That's right. That's what we use here. Right. Shall we keep moving on here?
Yeah, Derek has something.
Yep.
So Derek says, I was listening to episode 1054, and you shared how the Apple keynote mentioned complex shortcuts for the action button. I thought I would share my action button shortcut and see if it sparks any ideas for your own. When the shortcut runs, first, I get the screen brightness. If it is less than or equal to 20%, I then toggle the flashlight. I use auto brightness, so the idea here is that if the screen is dark, then I am probably in a dark place and need the flashlight. Second, if the screen is brighter, greater than 20%, I get the device's orientation. If the orientation is landscape right, meaning that the action button is on top, I open the camera. At that point, I use the volume buttons next to it to take the picture. Finally, if all of those conditions are not met, then I open my favorite podcast app. Shortcuts are starting to get more and more helpful for getting your device's state and doing something with it. Hopefully, this helps give you some ideas to use the action button better.
Yeah. Man.
That's pretty cool.
Right? I don't think I knew that you could get the device's orientation in a shortcut and do things with it. So I think we need to ring the bell again here. I should have rang it for the other thing too, about the Yeah, there you go. Oh, yeah, the real Bill. I like it. yeah, that's really smart.
Yeah.
It's cool. Like he said, I love the shortcut that he described. I especially love the context he gave it, that like, I'm going to tell you what I do so that you can do other things that maybe this inspires. And that I love. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. The idea is, you know, that the idea here really is about, hey, there's a bunch of like these states that you can look into when you're writing your shortcuts, right? So, you know, I didn't know you could tell what orientation, not only what orientation your device is in, but whether it's right or left.
Like, yes.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. But of course it knows, like it has to know which side is up. We're aware that the device knows this stuff and apps can know it. Really cool that shortcuts can know it. I love it. Yeah.
Yep.
I know. Yeah. Very cool. The ideas are swimming. Speaking of swimming ideas, we mentioned snapshot management in episode 1048 and talked about how you can manage them with Disk Utility and also Carbon Copy Cloner. And as usual, I made sure the folks at Carbon Copy Cloner knew about the mention. And Mike over there, Mike Bombick from Carbon Copy Cloner, wrote in and said, shared some interesting things. He says, snapshot disk usage, purgeable space, and Disk Utility snapshot size values happen to be one of my favorite topics. He says, this is a little bit future-leaning, but not all snapshots are purgeable. They are on the startup disk. Nobody should create a snapshot on the startup disk and expect it to stick around long-term. But on they are purgeable on the startup disk is what I should have emphasized. But on other disks, snapshots should stick around until deleted by the end user or an application that they use to automate the management of such. And he says, I've been going back and forth with this one with Apple for about 6 years. And finally, in Sequoia, a.k.a. macOS 15, right? I think that's right. They have committed to stop deleting Carbon Copy Cloner snapshots. Frankly, I can't believe it has taken this long. They've literally been deleting what many people consider to be valuable user data. And I've even seen a few cases, he says, where people lost the opportunity to recover previous versions of files because the system deleted their snapshots. Disk Utilities, so that's a good thing. And by the way, I believe shortly hours after this episode comes out, or maybe days after, I think it's the 18th, right, that we all get macOS 15 and iOS 18 and iPadOS 18. So this is a feature to look forward to, and we'll focus a lot more on that stuff in episode 1056, the next one. But he does say Disk Utility snapshot size values, these are not actually helpful in terms of knowing how much space will be freed if you delete any specific snapshot. The sizes are cumulative, so the size indicates how much space is freed if you delete all snapshots up to a given snapshot. That's a bit misleading if you look at the last snapshot and think that you can just delete that snapshot to free all of the space. If you right-click on the table header, you can enable the private size column. Who knew? Wait, where's the bell? Ooh. I know. Right? Yeah, exactly. He says, which is more direct about individual snapshot sizes, i.e. the amount of space that would be freed if you were to delete a single snapshot. So yes, go into Disk Utility and enable that private size column on the snapshots view, right clicking. He says, just so you know, private size, and we all know, is the size value that Carbon Copy Cloner presents. And he has a whole article about this, which, of course, we will link in the show notes. So thank you, thank you, thank you for that, Mike. Great, great stuff. He's such a smart dude. Yeah, he's
smart, smart guy. Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of developers we have in this community that make, you know, our software and everything like truly awesome. Like they are incredible. Just incredible.
Incredible
stuff.
I'm blown
away every time.
Yeah. Zoe corrects me. iOS 18, my initial statement was accurate. iOS 18 comes out on September 16th, which is the Monday that this episode comes out. So yeah, my apologies for the miscorrection, and thank you to Zoe for the uncorrection, recorrection. So, yes, love that we, I love that we do this in with a live stream for exactly these reasons, so that we can just get things right. Yes, everything comes out on Monday the 16th, including Mac Geek Gab 1055, the episode you are actually listening to. So, yeah. Okay. What else do we have here? Oh, yeah. Scott had it. Scott has had an interesting issue using, he is an Eero Plus subscriber, and he has noticed that every time he updates his Eero firmware software, or it is updated automatically, which is more often the case, if he goes into his Eero Plus settings in the Discover tab, the advanced security and ad blocking sliders are off. He opened a support ticket with Eero, and they noted, they acknowledged that he was right in that those sliders appeared to be, were off, but the features were still on. There was a disconnect between the app and the setting itself. And so obviously toggling it would set the sliders to appear correct as well as the feature. But the feature itself was not being disabled by the updates, just the app's ability to read it from whatever, you know, data store, the JSON feed it's getting from the cloud is slightly different with each version. So in theory, this will be remedied, and maybe it already has by Eero. We've had this for about 10 days here because last episode was the keynote recap or keynote dissection, I should say. So thank you to Scott for that, because yeah, that's good stuff. Interesting. It happens. Software. Fun. You've never had any problems like that with your software, Adam, right?
Not specifically like that, no.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like other things, yes, yeah. Sorry, you can't find things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I was trying to look up, because I might have a bonus tip for that, but I got to remember. Oh, yeah, so I last night was trying to pull up a photo from my favorites, and I have installed the public beta of iOS 18 on my iPhone.
Okay.
And so I pop it open, and I'm like, go to my albums, and I'm looking through my albums, and I'm like, there's no favorites album. Where's my favorites album? You know, and they redesigned how Photos is in the whole layout of Photos. I looked and I looked and I looked under utilities and I looked under here or there. And I'm like, it's got to be in here. I could search for it and okay. It would find all of my favorites. And then I could tap and see all of them. I could see all of them with the little hearts on them. So they were all there in my data. And I had, I guess, just literally scrolled past it. So there is a new thing called pinned collections. And so favorites has moved under there. So if anybody... now or when iOS 18 comes out, launches Photos, and like, where'd my favorites album go? That's where it is. And I had my wife confirm on her phone that, yes, there was a favorites album where those were aggregated, but now it's a pinned collection, I guess is what they call it.
Yep. I'm so glad you brought that up. I went through the same thing when I installed the beta initially. It was like, what's going on? Like, they've got to still be here. But yeah, it's not as front and center as it used to be. It's still fairly front and center. It's just a little bit hidden. Yep.
Yeah, you have to scroll down and it's in a little bar with little square preview icons. And you can customize that pinned collection. Like there's an option to tap in there and you can reorder it and do a bunch of different kinds of pinned collections. But yeah, it's like... why'd they move it out of albums though? Like it was fine there.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. Yep. That is a good one. It's good. All right. We will do more iOS 18 and Mac OS 15 quick tips. It is 15, right? I get so confused.
I don't.
Yeah, it's 15. Yeah, because we're on Sonoma 14. It'll be Sequoia 15. Okay.
Sahara 17.
Oh my God, you're totally right. What about 16? What's 16 going to be then?
Oh, we skipped 16. That is Sausalito.
Oh, it's got to be Sausalito, though. We got to have an S and an A. We came up with some others.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I can't think of it off the top of my head right now.
I don't know. Supercalifragilistica. In August, we started doing monthly giveaways. And in August, we gave away 5 copies of Reincubate's Camo, which is an app I am currently using. I use it literally every time we record the show because I use it with my iPhone 13 mini as my webcam, and it's awesome. So I wanted to congratulate our winners, Peter Horan, Tim Kobler, Chris Westergaard, Ben Rosenthal, and Kirk Moss. Congrats. They have already been contacted, of course, and given their licenses and all of that stuff. And we have a new giveaway, of course, for September. Our plan, our system is to do this once per month and have one giveaway per month. And this month, it is yet another piece of software. It is OneFocus, and we are giving away, again, 5 more copies of that in partnership with the folks at OneFocus. This is an app that helps block apps and websites on your Mac to help you focus. And let me tell you, there were some moments in August where I should have been using this app. I am glad it exists. Yeah. So go to, we've got links in the show notes always, but go to macgeekab.com/giveaway. That will always bring you to the current giveaway. Sign up each month, and there are opportunities to actually sign up more than once for yourself by sharing and doing some things and reposting and all that stuff. You kind of get some extra signups, and you get to, you know, do your thing. So have fun with it, and we'll do another one next month. We have lots coming, so I'm excited.
Cool.
Yeah, we've got
free stuff is always good.
Free stuff for you.
Yeah.
When I first brought it to the team, of course, at Backbeat, we're focused on sales, obviously, you know. And when I first brought it to the team, they're like, "Great, what can we sell it for?" I'm like, "Maybe someday, but right now, I just want to do it. I don't want to have somebody's lack of interest in buying this opportunity to keep all of us and you from having the opportunity. I'd rather just offer it." And so we are just offering it. And I guess I'm looking at myself in my camera here, which, of course, Reincubate Camo is doing. And I'm wearing my Cirque du Mac t-shirt from Cirque du Mac 11. And I'm reminded that we did the same thing with Cirque du Mac. When we did the first Cirque du Mac party, we self-funded. And we did that for the first 3, maybe 4. But I think it was just the first 3. But I remember there was someone who has been still in our industry. I don't want to out them. But you could probably figure it out because they were at the first Cirque du Mac party and they're like, "This is amazing. I want to sponsor it." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's cool. I'm not ready to have other people help define what this could be. I want to define it and get it solidified and then just offer the sponsorship opportunity. Because if I offered sponsors the opportunity to sponsor something that was not yet built, they would have more of a hand in defining what it was." And so, but I did promise that person, I said, "You will be the first phone call I make the moment we open sponsorships up to this party." And so I think it was like 3 years later that I called him up and I said, "You're the first. You want it?" And he's like, "I told you I would." And I'm like, "Great." And then we got a bunch more. And thankfully we didn't have to pay for everybody's drinks at Cirque du Mac every single time because y'all are expensive. There was one Cirque du Mac where the bill was, at least one where the bar bill was over $50K. So,
yeah.
Maybe $60K. Yeah. I have all the numbers. I have not gone, I don't know that I will ever do this, Adam. But I certainly, at this point, have not gone back and tallied up everything we spent on the 11 Cirque du Macs we did and all of the sponsor money that we received to see whether we were net positive in the end or net negative. Because there were some that were sponsored where the end bill was more than what we had anticipated, and so we didn't have it covered, you know. And then there were some where it was the other way, right? You know, so there were some of them where it was like, wow, we made a profit on this. That wasn't really the goal. And it was like, well, you know, I don't know that we've actually made a profit on this.
Right.
But again, that wasn't the point of Cirque du Mac. It was an event for the community for us all to have fun. And so these giveaways are kind of the same thing. So anyway, it's just kind of my thing.
Very cool.
Yeah. Best all not to look, says Grumpy in the chat. And I agree. We have more tips to share, though, Adam, shall we?
Oh, more tips.
Well, we had a conversation.
Yeah, right. We got a couple more here.
You know, it's funny to me. We talk about all kinds of things on the show, and then something will resonate, and we'll wind up talking about it for two more episodes. It always, I am always surprised at what that is, and the whole idea of unifying the downloads folder is it. So for now,
apparently, now, so that's the thing of the moment.
That's so the John, thing of the moment. Yeah.
John says, gents, not gentlemen, gents, was just listening to Mac Geek Gab 1053 in the discussion regarding the downloads folder for iCloud and for your Mac. What I do, which I think is the best of both worlds, is to place an alias of my iCloud download folder inside my Mac's regular download folder. That way, I don't sync large files across from my Mac's download folder, yet have easy access to anything that I save on my mobile devices. And if there is something I want to share with my mobile devices that I downloaded on my Mac, I just drag it into the alias of my iCloud download folder. Easy as pie, and makes everything just the way I like it.
Ah, I like this. Okay. Yep. I all the different creative ways that people have solved this issue. Clearly, this is something Apple needs to address. Like, there's enough folks out here that care about this that, I don't know, it seems like a thing. Jeff has another way of doing this. He said, in talking about this, I took a different approach for a unified downloads folder. On my Mac, I make sure the downloads folder in my home folder is empty, and then I delete it. Okay. In iCloud Drive, I create an alias of the iCloud downloads folder and then drag that alias into my home folder. The alias to my iCloud Drive downloads folder thus replaces the downloads folder that formerly resided in my home folder. I repeat this process on every Mac that I have. And then, as has been discussed, in iOS, iPadOS, Safari settings, choose iCloud Drive as its downloads destination, and that's it. Now, he says, thanks to iCloud, the contents of the downloads folder will be the same across all your Apple devices, just as if Apple offered downloads in the cloud. Delete an item from the downloads folder on one device, and it will be deleted from the downloads folders on all of your devices. There is no need to change settings on perhaps multiple browsers or multiple mail applications. Oh, right, because there is no vestigial downloads folder hanging around in your home folders to cause confusion. I like this. Okay. And he says, I also added the unified downloads folder to the My Finder sidebar for easy access. Oh, okay. I like this. Yeah, downloads in the cloud. Yeah. It seems like that. I like that phrase because it's somewhat of an oxymoron. It's like you've downloaded it, but it's still in the cloud. Like, where is it? Downloads in the cloud. It makes my brain hurt. I like things that make my brain hurt, usually. So, yeah.
Well, Carrot has another way that he handles this issue. He says, hello, Dave, Adam, and Pete. I would like to offer a comment regarding Andrew's quick tip on the uniform iCloud folder, particularly in response to Dave's concern about accidental large files clogging iCloud storage. I use a Hazel rule to manage files in my downloads folder by automatically moving them to iCloud after 24 hours. This approach requires vigilance on my part. I assess downloaded files to determine their future usefulness. Files that I anticipate needing later are retained, while unnecessary or large files are promptly deleted after use.
I like it. That's smart. I actually had a similar thought, but we'll give Kirit credit for it because Kirit had it before me. Yeah, that's smart. We could take Kirit's idea and merge everything together, because the concern, bear with me on this. I'm talking while my mouth is open while I'm thinking, which is rarely a good idea. but here's the thought. The concern is we don't want to fill up our iCloud drive with massive downloads, right? You know, the disk images, things that aren't going to be helpful.
Right.
You know, they might be helpful to your other Macs. That's sort of its own issue. But what if a Hazel rule was used, or maybe not Hazel, maybe ChronoSync? A Mac would have to be running all the time. But looked at both downloads folders and kept them in sync. So you have your iCloud downloads folder, your Mac downloads folder. Keep both of those in sync. However, put a filter in there that says anything that's like a disk image, don't do that. Anything that's, you know, larger than 1 gigabyte, don't do that, right? And that way you kind of have all of your other downloads, the PDFs, the little things, but the stuff that's not going to be helpful to your, on your iPhone or your iPad doesn't need to be there. And you could also use ChronoSync, or maybe even better, Resilio Sync with some of these rules to keep your downloads folders amongst all of your Macs in sync, even with the large files. So I don't know. Like, there's a world here. I don't know that there would be a one size fits all solution, but similar to, you know, what Derek did for us with the customized shortcuts thing, maybe this gives, certainly this stream of consciousness that I just blurted out here gives me some ideas to think about, even if I don't use the ones that I said. I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially like with the iCloud folder, you know, like just a one way, what you'd be doing really a one way sync with those rules. Right. So Mac to your iCloud folder.
Well, you'd want the, because the iCloud folder is already on your Mac. Right. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, you'd only need to get the ones that are from your local Mac that you want from your local Mac into your iCloud folder, right? If I'm thinking about this right. Because the iCloud folder is going to sync anyway.
And you wouldn't have to copy them. You could move them.
Yeah.
So that you don't keep two copies on your Mac.
That's true. Yeah. You'd actually probably want that.
Right.
Yeah. See?
So now you have downloads that aren't on iCloud intentionally by rule and not by manual management, and then max that down the rest. Huh. See, there's all kinds of things. This is what I love about nerding out.
Yeah, and we'll get 27 more ways to people do this for next time.
I was going to say we probably need to retire this topic temporarily, but that's not fair. Like, we do that. Well, like, we will intentionally be like, let's wait 3 weeks to bring it back and collect all the things so we're not just doing it every week.
I think it's fair because you know where folks can go.
Where can folks go?
Our Discord.
Yes.
And they can share it there, and then everybody gets all the information.
I love our Discord community. It's so good, man.
And anybody can sign up, right? Yep.
Thousands of people. Everybody behaves. Everybody's so more than that. Like, obviously everybody behaves. It's our community. But everybody's so helpful and smart. And of course, all of that's also obvious. Like, I don't need to say any of these things. It's awesome.
Yep.
Yep.
MacGeekab.com/Discord.
That's right. Jeremy has a question, and I'm hoping we can give him an answer here. He says, chaps, because he knows we're uncomfortable with the word gentleman. Thank you. he says, I have 5, count them, external drives hanging off my MacBook Pro via a Best Tech powered hub, which is over 5 years old now, and an Anchor something or other. He says, I don't know what the Anchor something or other is. We'll get to that. I'm getting odd issues with drives not mounting or not behaving as they should, and I suspect the drives, the cables, and or the hub might need updating. Any advice on sorting this out? And he gives us a little more detail about what he has. He has a 14-inch M3 MacBook Pro. He has the Bestech 3-in-1 hub, which has 4 USB 3 ports and 2 Type A ports and an audio jack. And then an Anker 7-in-1 hub with HDMI, power delivery, USB-C, and 2 USB-A 5-gig ports. An external monitor via HDMI, and a USB wireless charger, all connecting via USB B to A. I don't think he means B to A. I think he means C to A. But anyway, thoughts on this, my friend?
Yeah. I don't think maybe Anchor is going to like my thoughts and answer on this.
Good news. Anchor didn't sponsor this episode. You know what? We didn't have any sponsors for this episode.
I love them.
So we're free and clear.
I love their products. I own tons of their products. I only buy cables from them, like, exclusively, yep. And I buy them in bulk. I think I've mentioned I have what I call Adam Amazon in the house with just a supply of Anchor power warts and cables and stuff because my family is always constantly asking me for them. So that out of the way, I have an Anchor. I don't know, remember what this thing is, like a USB-C hub, you know, dock, right?
Yep.
Thunderbolt dock. It's great most of the time, but I have an issue, and it happened last episode. You guys saw me just disappear.
Right. I remember
it just will die, like, out of the blue, and I don't know if it gets too hot, because it does get super hot.
Yep.
I don't know. Like, it just gives up the ghost. And so this is an opposite problem. I usually have it where I've literally unplugged all my external drives from it because it will just randomly disconnect my drives, and I lose keyboards and I lose all this stuff that's connected through that thing when it happens. And it's like a millisecond. It just flips out. And I tried to troubleshoot it, I'm convinced I probably just need to replace it. It was what I probably ultimately should do. But I'm just being lazy about it. So that's one thing, is like, I might suspect that. Now, I've tried, like, Googling it, searching it. One thing that I thought was, because it's a vertical one, the way the power comes into it, the cord hangs, like, straight down the back. So it's up at the top of the, because it's a vertical dock.
Yeah, yeah.
And it hangs down. And so I even bought these little stick-on, because it would pull the USB-C cable, the Thunderbolt cable, kind of at a weird angle.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, when I bump the desk, it's jiggling and it's just hitting the connection just enough. But I bought this little stick-on thing from OWC. They're great, that lock your USB-Cs, like, in.
Yes.
So they can't wiggle or move. And that, I thought that worked for a while, but then it started doing it again. So
is it possible that it's your Mac? Like, have you isolated it? Have you tested this and seen the issue with the hub on a different Mac?
No, I haven't done that yet. Okay. So that's kind of where I was going next, right? Is the next troubleshooting is it a device in the chain? Is it, you know, so it gets to what I call, because I'm old school, right? This is the, what did we have back in the day? Not extensions, extensions?
Oh, extensions, yeah, manager. Yeah.
Extension manager, right? Which was like, some extensions misbehaving. This could be some device is misbehaving. So, you know, it's like, really the way to test this, I guess you could go two ways. You could try just disconnecting one device and kind of go backwards, but probably the better way to do it is, like, take everything off, put one thing in, see if that all works fine and you don't have any issues. And then if you don't, then plug the next thing in. Like, you know, it's kind of work through the chain and see...
It's is hard
there
to
a thing
do
in this chain that's misbehaving.
Right? I call it isolation testing, but
right. It's
hard to do when you rely on all of the things.
It's tedious.
So you kind of have to do one. When I'm in that scenario, I would love to have only one thing connected and isolate that way, because then you're certain. But that's what it is. But often I do the first thing you suggested, which is one at a time. Right. I'm oddly reminded of when we had, there was one summer we had four cats in the house and one of them was peeing on the couch, but we didn't know which one. And so what we did was we isolated one cat at a time. And then we had to like isolate different permutations of the cats to know for certain that, okay, it's definitely that cat. Like it only ever has happened with this cat. But if we just left one cat out and isolate, you know, and hid the other three or lock the other three up, A, that would be very difficult to do with the way our house is. But B, you know, maybe it's one of the cats is bothering the other one and that's why it's doing this, you know. So it was a whole thing. I don't know why we got here. Isolation testing.
Yeah. Paul brought up in chat another one. I don't remember if he said if these were all like powered hubs and stuff like that. I mean, in my case, I have all powered hubs, although it might be worth checking the power rating because I do have like four USB powered USB drive, but I've unplugged all those from mine. So like I'm running mine and all that's hooked into it are keyboard and mouse in my Mac at this point. There's sure. Some UB keys and like there's not a lot plugged into that thing right now and no drives at this point. But in, you know, our listener's case, yeah, is everything getting enough power through the entire chain? Like is something drawing too much power? Because a common thing people will do is they'll get an unpowered USB hub, plug that into their, you know, main docking station or whatever, and then hang a bunch of things off of it, right? And then it doesn't have enough, they don't have enough power, and so they start behaving oddly.
So with that, it would be kind of, now the cat anecdote makes sense, right? Because one device by itself isn't going to have the problem if that's or isn't going to have the symptom. If the problem is power draw, you need to have enough that are drawing too much. Yeah, exactly. So maybe that's one test, Jeremy, is to balance the power load amongst your two different hubs. But I think both of these are powered hubs. They are not drawing their power from the Mac. If they are, I know the Anchor one is powered because you say it's got power delivery, so it's clearly going in that direction. Yeah. But make sure the Best Tech one is, I'm assuming it is, and balance things amongst them. I've certainly had to do, my studio is a very delicately balanced thing, both in terms of power draw and also data flow. Because I use my Thunderbolt and external USB hubs, and I have three of them attached to my Mac Studio. But I use them for, obviously, you know, devices like drives and my audio interface and all the other stuff that we plug in. But also displays. And displays consume a not insignificant amount of data flow in one direction, right? When they're plugged into a hub. So, you know, it was a whole thing getting it here. And then what was it, you know, a year ago, last summer or whatever, when I had to replace it, like, you know, with no warning, it's like, well, do I have to rethink all my power and data balancing? Or can I just plug another computer into this? And it was like, when my local dealer said, well, I have an M1 Max Studio, it's like, that has enough ports. I'll take it. I don't need to think. I just can. It's a drop-in replacement. Well, plus a monitor, but, you know,
That's why it's specifically why I have my monitors plugged directly into my Mac is that monitor power draw thing.
Yeah. Well, and data flow too. Like, you know, if you don't want to slow down write speeds to your super fast Thunderbolt drive just because it's sharing a bus with something that's got full-time data flow going to it at 4K or whatever. So we have more questions, Adam. Yeah. I want to take a quick second though before we get to the rest of the questions and thank all of you who have sent in your contributions to our premium program at geekup.com/premium. As I always say, this is very much appreciated and also very much optional. But it is an integral part of the show, especially episodes like this one where, you know, you are the sponsors for this episode. So I want to thank everybody whose contributions have come in. I'll start with Scott in Fresno with $100 contribution. Thank you very much. And also thanks to Walter in Kansas City and Rich in Peachtree City for their $60 contributions. Amazing. Thank you both. Kenneth in White Plains for your $50 contribution. David in Louisa for your $45 contribution. And Robert in Hamilton for your $30 contribution. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And then we have some folks, lots of folks on the $25 contribution plan whose subscriptions and even one-time contributions came in over the last couple of weeks since we've done this. Michael in Bristol, David in Chicago, John in Henrico, Russell in Jeffersonton, Daniel in London, Matt in Midlothian, Robert in Oro Valley, Larry in Southborough, Peter in Sudbury, Jonathan in Tempe, Eric in Trondheim, Ed in Vancouver, and then a slew of folks who joined the program before we were forced to capture anyone's address data. And that is William, Wesson, Stuart, Kirshen, Martine, Jonathan, Bruce, Jeff, and Pierre Timo. Thank you all for your $25 contributions. Thanks to Roger and Blaine for your $15 contribution. And then the following folks for their $10 contributions. Wagner, James, Gary, Scott, Jason, Chris, Robert, Mark, Stephen, Jeremiah, Donald, Paul, Joseph, Nick, James, another Stephen, Jonathan, Cal, another James, Abel, Phil, Mark, John, and Neil, you all rock. And if you're interested in learning more about that and supporting the show directly, MacGeekUp.com/premium is the place to go. And of course, if you have feedback about the premium program, that can go to premium@MacGeekUp.com. In addition, all of your questions, because you are premium listeners, can go to premium@MacGeekUp.com. And that is the cue that we answer first, although the secret is we really try to answer everything every week and often succeed. We didn't last week, but we caught up before this episode, so we succeeded. I call that success. All right, shall we?
Thank you to everybody. Just add.
Absolutely. You want to take us to the next one?
Yeah. So Joe has a question. He says, Michael Tsai has some commentary, and he gives us a link that we'll have in the show notes, about Tim Sweeney, the Epic Games poobah and Apple hater who made the bizarre claim that thieves who steal Apple gear have a right to privacy and that Find My is creepy. I'm not interested in him or his nutty views, Joe says. However, in discussing his comments, Michael Tsai says at the bottom of the link that he doesn't recommend enabling Find My Mac. Quote, because when anyone breaks into your Apple ID account, they can remotely wipe your Mac, whereas if you use File Vault and elect not to store the info with your Apple ID, your data is safe, even if the Mac gets stolen. So I think this collection of features is not designed properly. I wish I could find my Mac without putting my data at risk, end quote. It seems to me that the risk of having your Mac, this is Joe again, especially MacBook stolen, is much greater than the risk of having your Apple ID broken into. What do you guys think?
Huh. Yeah, now I'm wishing I had read this one and given it to you, Adam. But it is, no, it's a good question.
Oh, was that supposed to? Did I mess it up?
No, you did it right. You did it the way we planned it. I don't know that I have. This is one of those things, right? You've got me thinking. Because my gut reaction is, I agree with Michael Tsai in that I wish Apple would give me more granular options here and not just lump all of these things together. Right. That would be the best of all worlds, is if we could choose, you know, separate those two things. And but that's like the ultimate Apple user's dilemma, is we like using Apple stuff because Apple makes it work fairly reliably. Obviously not perfectly, because that's why we have this show. But, you know, in general, like, they work pretty well and they're all synced together and there's all those cool things, and Apple is privacy focused both in practice and in preaching. And so, like, we take the good with the bad, and this is one of those times. But I wish it were different, specifically here for me.
I guess I reject the premise to a certain degree. Like, I don't see the problem here. This is choices. I mean, this comes down to, like, you choosing how you're going to manage your security. Like, I mean, I use FindMy and I use FileVault and I don't store stuff with Apple so that, you know, like, I'm willing to assume the risk for the security that, you know, Apple can't unlock my stuff. Like, I can't, they don't have the keys, right? We have that option to not let Apple have the keys to all this stuff. Am I missing something here? Or,
nope. Like, no, that's how it works. Yeah, you're right. No, you're absolutely right. This is one of those things where, and I suppose, and this is why I wanted to have this conversation in the show, is we all need to make these decisions eyes wide open, right?
Right.
And so the decision you're making, which is the same exact one I'm making, is something I'm aware of, right? And it's not something I'm going to be surprised by when I run into whatever the problem is that I might run into because of the choices I made. And it's that whole, you know, security, privacy continuum, like security and privacy and convenience continuum thing where you can't have ultimate convenience without opening up every security hole in the world. And you can't have ultimate privacy and security without making it super inconvenient to yourself. Right.
So, well, I mean, and again, like, and I've trained this to my family. I've trained this, like, I make sure the people in my family know all this stuff and I make sure that they know why they need to be concerned about these things and make these choices. And I do that to people in the community. I mean, we do it here. We talk to each other. So, like, this just feels like a him problem, not like,
yeah,
you know, yeah, like you're getting hung up on something that just, like, you want to have your cake and eat it too. But I mean, that's not, maybe Tim Sweeney's not, he's not a security guy. I guess he's a CEO of a game company, but, like, you'd think he'd know better. But, like,
yeah,
you know, the point is, like, this is how security works in this day and age. And, you know, like, make sure your Mac locks when it goes to sleep and that you're using, you know, the encryption that's available to you and that you are setting, like, really good passwords and not doing stupid stuff. And, like, then if your Mac gets stolen, they're not getting in there. They don't have access, you know? And so, like, you can still do the iCloud thing and choose to trust Apple and let them have your thing. And you should be fine because, again, if you're setting a good Apple ID password and you're following the rules that you should be following, like, a lot of this should be mitigated. I'm not saying it's, like, never going to happen because, again, technology changes all the time. But, like, if you're doing the best practices for the time, I feel like you're going to be pretty well protected.
I agree. I think the trick is the eyes wide open part. And like you said, that's why we do what we do here. It's exactly. Yep. But as Porthos John in the chat points out, good security on your Apple ID is the answer here. And
yeah,
yes,
it's that simple.
It's that simple. Yep. Go ahead.
I was just going to add the point is, and Apple gives you a lot of tools, all of the tools you need to do to facilitate that.
I have an asterisk to add to that, which is part of a rant. And it is that the way it works with our Apple ID passwords, we are almost forced to use something that we can memorize for our Apple ID password. And that's the part where, and I know that they've been working on, like, they're aware that this was a much bigger issue years ago. Like, now on your Mac, you can log in to your Apple ID using your user account if you have things set up that way. So you can just have to use your user account password, which is also something that you have to memorize, right? So they've shifted it one step away, which is better because at least someone has to have one of your devices, but still your user account password has to be something that you remember. And I know that, you know, Touch ID is a convenience thing, but if you don't have your user account memorized, there's no way you could use your Mac, right? And so I use a very insecure user account password on my Macs, and it's the same on all of my Macs. And I probably shouldn't even admit that publicly. But I do, right? Because it's convenient. And I know that that is a, but again, you know, I'm self-aware that I choose right. to do this because yeah, but it's, if somebody were to watch me log into my Mac with my password, which is why I like Touch ID, like in that sense, Touch ID on the Mac is a security feature because no one can watch you type your password if you're not typing your password, right? Or the watch unlock right. or any of those things. But if somebody were to watch me type in my password, you could get into all my Macs. And it wouldn't, you could watch from probably 4 feet, 5 feet away and still figure out what I'm doing or something close enough to it. And I'm not proud of that, but it is just a fact, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But also your Apple ID, like I'm curious, how many of us, do you use an Apple ID password that is just random gibberish that you've never memorized, or is yours something you have memorized?
I couldn't tell you what it is right now.
Okay. And how
it's in one password in it.
Interesting. And how much of a pain in the neck is that for you? Like, what are the, do you run into
almost
scenarios?
Zero.
Almost zero. Huh. Yeah. Maybe I need to change my tune on this.
Especially now. Like, yeah, I mean, I had to deal with it. I had to deal with it today, but I mean, I can't pop open the 1Password app or pop open 1Password on a device. And, you know, it's occasionally I have to type in a long, complex thing, but like, it's rare when I actually have to do that.
But that means, like, you have to have your 1Password password memorized.
Yeah.
I'm just saying mine is.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, but that's the thing. If you are not using 1Password and you're using Apple's Passwords app, right? The iCloud mm-hmm. Passwords, iCloud Keychain, sorry. Then what? Yeah. Like, you have to have your Apple ID password memorized, right?
Yes, you would. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
I'd presume so, because there's occasionally the time when you need to do that. Unless, do you? I guess you could, I mean, you'd have to log in on another device and then go into the keychain and then get it from there. I mean, you could do it that way, or from the Apple password app, I guess, now in the future, right?
No, right. You keychain or the Apple password app. Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. But in that case, you'd have to have another device that you can get into, probably your Mac, which then it goes back to your previous statement that, like, you have to have a complex password that you remember for getting into your Mac.
Yeah.
And if you're being really the way you should be, you would have a different one for each Mac.
Yes. Oh, I know that. I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't do that, but I do. I mean, my login for my Mac is it's a very secure, following all the password rules, like super long, random. Yeah, login that I just have memorized.
And how often do you change that? These are the problems,
I don't change it. But I mean, it's a fair point. But, like, you know, like at that point, like, if someone can figure that out, I mean, I guess, again, AI and new technologies and, like, brute force. But, like, in theory, it would take way too long, and I'm probably going to be dead by then. So, like, I don't know.
Right. No, I get it. Yeah. It's just an interesting, like, we have to create holes, because it's like, it's either that or you write it down somewhere. It's like, okay, well, you know, there's always got to be that hole. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, and like, it has to be shared with my family, right? In case something happens
yes.
to me. So that's that's in 1Password. Mm-hmm. So, like, and they all have access. We use the family account and all that thing. And I also have the their security thing too. Like, they have a thing where you can actually generate a paper copy of a, like, get out of jail free card, and then that is locked away in safe deposit box or whatever.
Yep.
Right. Or a safe, if you have that in your house, or however you want to protect that. But again, that is still another hole. You got to recognize, like, that's another hole.
Yeah.
But that's, like,
I guess that's,
you know,
I mean,
and then you got to manage that.
We're never, right? Given what we have available to us right now, and I'll say this, but I would like to be proven incorrect. So, again, feedback at MacGeekup.com. But given what we have right now, we must simply choose at least one, you know, hole, if you will, right? Either an easy to memorize password or, you know, even a complex password that we've been able to commit to memory, but probably are reluctant to change as often as we would advise others to, right? You know, like, but whatever those things, one of those things is almost certainly true, or I would say one of those things is certainly true for all of us. We're just each choosing the one that we're most comfortable with. But if it's not true for you, if you have figured out the path around this, feedback at MacGeekGab.com. Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, that puts us at the end of the show. We've exhausted all of our
time.
Huh? Yes, we certainly have. But I would say we've exhausted it in a valuable way. I hope you all feel the same way. I feel like I got a bunch out of this. So do you feel like you got a bunch out of this one, Adam?
I for sure did, always.
Great. Yeah. Well, then that's the goal. When we say at the beginning that we each get to learn five new things, that starts with us. It hopefully then sort of by proxy goes to all of you. But it absolutely is meant. When I came up with that years ago, it was for us, the hosts, to remember that we are here to learn together. You know, because we can't possibly, none of us can be the experts on all of the things. We certainly have our areas of expertise, and even there are always new things to learn. However, there's always new things to learn. So, thank you for learning together with us and having some fun for the ride, folks. Yep, thanks to Cashfly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. And make sure to go listen to Pete's podcast. So there I was. He will be back, of course. And again, our thoughts are with you, buddy, and you and your family and all of that. Thanks for hanging out.
Yes.
Thanks. Go check out. What was I going to say to check out? What are we going to say this time? Well, go sign up for the giveaway. Go to MacGeekGab.com/giveaway.
Yes.
Yeah. There you go. Do that. It's great. You'll love it. New software to play with. What could go wrong? Seriously. All right, Adam. Pete's not here with his shirt. I'm wearing my Cirque du Mac shirt. We're going to have to do this one from memory. Maybe this is one of our passwords. What might you have to say to folks?
I would say don't have this is your password so you don't get caught. And don't get caught.
Me.
Well said. Later, everybody.